Ryan Pinder in the morning for Glenmore Audi. Open up a world of new roads with the Audi Q5. Experience dynamic styling, impressive performance, and outstanding luxury. Visit glenmoreaudi.com.
Welcome to the Pinder Hour, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. Beautiful day today, blue skies outside the windows of our downtown studio here at the City TV building in the heart of downtown. Got some ball tonight, golf season, late arrival but in full swing now. Great time to be in Calgary. Coming up in the next hour, Brendan Dillon of the San Jose Sharks will join us at 9:25. We'll ask him, we've been watching Vegas. What about playing against Vegas? What are your expectations? What do they do well? Why have they been so bloody successful? Also, we'll chat with Todd Halpin, recapping the unofficial fifth major, the Players' Championship. Webb Simpson ran away with this thing. He shot a 73 on Sunday, a one over par, and still easily won the tournament by four strokes. That's how big his lead was through Saturday's play. And Tiger, with a flash of the Sunday red before he came back to earth late, but an impressive run nonetheless. All that coming up, but let's head back to Winnipeg and talk a little NHL postseason hockey as we, three series left. Two of them midway, closing in on the midway points at least. It was game number two in Winnipeg with a chance for the home side to go up 2-0 in the series that would not come to fruition. Jonathan Marchessault scored twice. That's nice. Pretty good. Doubled their lead early.
Connor's turned back. Here's Marchessault with Smith. He backhands. He scores. Turnover in the neutral zone. And Jonathan Marchessault had options but chose to stick handle the puck into the back of the net. It's 2-0.
Chose to cheese.
Riley Smith again, straight up the middle with Marchessault. It drops. Backhander scores. Jonathan Marchessault gets his second of the night, and that settles the crowd and restores the two-goal lead for Vegas.
His fifth and sixth of the season. Jay, can you do me a favor? Would love you to come on air and say the word Marchessault.
Marchessault.
Pretty good. I like it. Well done.
Marchessault.
Six on the postseason. And here's the deal. Tied at 1-1, heading to Vegas. Since 1974-75, the winner of Game 3, when the series tied at 1-1 in the conference finals. Winners hold an all-time record of 35-8. That's 81%. A massive Game 3 on tap in Vegas tomorrow night, safe to say. Marchessault, who established a career high during the regular season with 75 points in 77 games, he led all Golden Knight players and does lead all Golden Knight players with 15 points this postseason. The 10th player in NHL history to collect at least 15 points in his club's first ever trip to the playoffs. Want some other names on that list? Men who collected more points in their first ever postseason for a franchise. Ray Sheppard with Florida in 96 and Stu Barnes in 96 each had 16 points in the first ever postseason for the Panthers. The Islanders' first postseason, J.P. Parise had 16 points. Marian Gaborik in the inaugural Wild postseason run back in 03 had 17 points. Dave Lowry in 96 with Florida, 17 points. And your leaders for inaugural postseason runs, Jude Drouin. In 1975 with the Islanders, 18 points. Igor Larionov, 94 with the Sharks. He also had 18 points. Riley Smith collected the primary assist on both of number 81 for the Golden Knights' goals. He boosts his postseason totals to one goal and 13 assists for 14 points in 12 games. He's matching an NHL record for most assists by a player in his team's first ever postseason appearance. He's tied with Larionov. Marc-Andre Fleury is the NHL's active postseason win leader. Picked up career victory number 71 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. That moves him into a tie with Jacques Plante for ninth on the all-time list. Wow. He improves his record to 35-17 following a loss and is now 3-0 following a loss this postseason. His numbers, sterling. An NHL best 1.68 goals against and a 945 save percentage. That's not fair. Fleury was on the ice last night, of course, and continues to boost his career postseason minutes to 7,658. That's more than Chris Osgood now and Billy Smith, who he's leapfrogged. He's up to eighth most playoff minutes in NHL history. There you go. As for the action tonight, Capitals up 2-0 coming home. The Lightning have previously trailed 2-0 three times in franchise history and are looking to overcome the deficit to advance for the second time. The only time the Lightning have come back from a 2-0 hole in a series was back in 2003 when they did it against... yeah, you guessed it, the Capitals. Here's John Cooper on the challenge the Great Eight has posed the Lightning.
I think he's taken 14 years of frustration out in one playoffs round. Not just us, like his whole playoffs season. Like he's taking it out on that. And the one thing about Ovi is you just can't let him put him, can't allow him to have the puck in situations where he can shoot it clean.
That is the challenge for the Bolts tonight. We'll take you there. 6 o'clock. To Washington, D.C. Washington. 6 o'clock will take you there either way. Do we know if we have the Michigan call or the Washington call? I feel like we're taking the Washington call. Call me crazy. Either way, someone who gets very excited when his team scores. Talk about baseball. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate the tunes. The Blue Jays back at it after an off day. Just their second off day of May was yesterday. Of course, they were supposed to have that off day on the 3rd of the month. Ended up playing that doubleheader in Cleveland thanks to the rainout in mid-April. Woof. They played a doubleheader instead of the off day. They are a team that looked like they could use a little bit of a break. They have sent Anthony Alford back down to AAA. He, of course, the top organizational prospect in terms of outfielders. That likely signaling that Curtis Granderson's ready to take a regular role in the outfield. Elsewhere, Roberto Osuna's administrative leave extended to May 21st. Not big news there in terms of no surprise. He'll continue to be on leave, I would think, at least until his first court hearing, which doesn't come till quite a bit later. And that one's even quite preliminary, just with dates. If you're not familiar with how this works, even just 5 years ago, until a player was found guilty or innocent, most leagues wouldn't dare hand a suspension down. But that's not how Major League Baseball works now, nor the NFL. So they do their own investigation and will come to their own conclusion, whether he's found innocent or guilty. And until those first court hearings, I would expect the the administrative leave to continue. Not good for the Jays. Clearly the top priority, sorting out what happened with Osuna and the alleged victim. Not a good look for the Blue Jays, for Osuna. And on the field, not great to be missing one of your better arms, although certainly justified his absence for what he's been accused of. The baseball game tonight, interesting matchup. A former Blue Jay, or at least Blue Jays prospect. Boy, it would have been nice if he was a former Blue Jay, wouldn't it? It's going to be Noah Syndergaard. Yes, the man who throws 100. Thor, they call him. Was famously sent with Travis d'Arnaud to the Mets for R.A. Dickey and his caddy that goes by the name Josh Toley. I've actually heard Josh, he did some color in the booth recently. I want to say it was the Cleveland weekend because I recall rainouts, but he was phenomenal on a call-in show. I don't know that I can say I've heard his color work in-game, but great handling callers, seemed like an interesting guy, but not a good baseball player, just very good at catching the knuckleball. That deal was no good, and Syndergaard has been good, not great this year. The ERA, just a nudge over 3. That's very strong. 54 strikeouts, you take that. But he hasn't won since April 9th. That despite 4 consecutive quality starts. Opponents are hitting .287 against Syndergaard over those 4 quality starts, though. And Syndergaard will go to the mound tonight at Citi Field on 8 days rest. As for the Blue Jays, Jaime Garcia, he has not gone 6 innings since his first start as a Blue Jay. That was way back. He walked 5 batters his last outing against Seattle. But also the first time he didn't allow a home run. Garcia has not been what the Jays have hoped. He's been just okay as a 5 when it looked like he would have been one of the better 5s in baseball slotted there, given the track record, albeit an injury plague last few years around the majors. Interestingly, J.P. Ricciardi, of course, in management with the Mets, former ties to the Blue Jays. They had him on in Toronto earlier today, and he had this to say about why the Mets haven't been playing that great. Remember that hot start they got off to? Yeah, they're not looking up at a lot of teams in the NL East.
Well, we're not hitting the ball the way we did the first maybe month of the season, and a couple of guys are out of the lineup, so Frazier's out. That's been a little bit of a blow to us. And some of the other guys that are really good offensive players just haven't really kicked it in yet. So we've been scuffling a little bit that way. Our starters have been inconsistent in the sense of getting to the mound.
And former starter Matt Harvey, no longer a Met. Ricciardi talks about that whole situation, how to play it out.
You know, I really think it was a time for him to leave New York. I think it wasn't going to happen for him in New York. I think there was just too many things hanging over his head here, too many expectations from him, and, you know, kind of the persona that he created. But you know what? I'm really rooting for Matt. I'm happy for him that he had a good start the other day.
As for the other part of that Syndergaard deal that Blue Jays fans so famously will not want to remember, Travis d'Arnaud was the catcher who had all kinds of tools, but of course had that track record of being injured all the time. That, hasn't changed, according to JP.
I don't know if it is snake bit or if someone is injury prone. I remember Paul Molitor early in his career was hurt a lot and then settled down and had an unbelievable career. But I don't know what it is with Travis, and I feel for him because every spring training he comes in, he works hard in the off season, and he's in really good shape, and he looks primed to have a really good year. And I think the way we're going to use our catchers this year was really going to work, be beneficial to him.
Finally, last thought from Ricciardi. Of course, the discussion around the Blue Jays as the season progresses, it'll be more and more about Vladdy Guerrero Jr. He's now hitting .405 in AA as a 19-year-old. Your average age in AA, like 23, 24, he'd be absolutely the youngest player in that league and certainly the best through at least the opening few months. Thoughts on bringing a 19-year-old up to the bigs?
I'm a big believer, and if the player is ready to come to the big leagues and you have a spot for him without creating controversy, the player's telling you he's ready for the big leagues. And that's what I think a player should come to the big leagues. I don't worry so much about the service time in the sense that eventually he's going to have his 6 years, and eventually he's going to become a free agent. So, to me, I try to take advantage of the best opportunity to bring a player to the big leagues. And once again, I don't know because I don't know what their situation is in Toronto, but I do know he's a very good player. I had an opportunity to see him play last year against one of our clubs, and he's a very good player. The Jays got themselves a really good player there.
By the way, if you need him, Vlad Guerrero Jr., more three-hit games than no-hit games at AA this year. Safe to say he's ready for a new challenge. Get ready for Buffalo. Yeah, Buffalo. That, of course, will create all kinds of interest in Toronto. You'll see the road trips for the weekend. And a great ballpark there. Hopefully Rhett's there in time to catch Vladdy in Buffalo. He usually goes down there for America Day. What's America Day? July 4th. That'd be fun. As for the Blue Jays themselves, they find themselves one game over .500, four back of the wild card. The problem for the Blue Jays isn't their record. The problem is their play of late. They have just 3 wins in their last 10. They've lost 3 consecutive series. And, of course, the season-long problem is that they are housed in the same division as Boston and the New York Yankees. If the Blue Jays were in the Central Division, they would be leading the division. They are not. And instead, they find themselves 7.5 games back of the Yankees. Now, you don't need to catch the Yankees and you don't need to catch the Sox. But you've got to be the best of all the rest if you're not going to be a top two in the East, which they won't. So that means the second wild card or nothing for Toronto is your probable outcomes for playoff spots. Cleveland currently leads the Central. They have not played up to expectations, just at .500. And the Angels and the Astros fighting for top spot in the AL West. LA 9 games above .500, as are the Astros. They are tied. They're also playing each other, not only last night, where Houston won 2-1, where LA won 2-1, but also they'll play tonight and tomorrow as well for the remainder of that set. That's the baseball story. We'll come back with one of the good guys of the National Hockey League. There are many, but not many better than he. Brendan Dillon will join us, the Vancouver product, back home after the San Jose Sharks season came to a screeching halt against the stunning, surprising, nobody saw it coming Vegas Golden Knights. That conversation next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning for Glenmore Audi. Open up a world of new roads with the Audi Q5. Experience dynamic styling, impressive performance, and outstanding luxury. Visit glenmoreaudi.com.
Smith again, straight up the middle, with Marchessault in front. Backhander scores! Jonathan Marchessault gets his second of the night, and that settles the crowd and restores the two-goal lead for Vegas.
We got control of it. Can't get it clean. You know, and in part, you have to give them credit. Real good sticks on the puck, real hard. But we felt most of the issues that we had after that and didn't feel that we had started poorly at all. We liked the way we started. We didn't do a whole lot of clean things with the puck, but, you know, they were good. They were on the puck and didn't make it easy.
They're heading home tied. It's been the story of the season in the NHL. I don't know that there's anything close. I mean, sure, you know, some teams we expected to be bubble teams and they're better. We thought some teams would be in and weren't in. sorry, Jay, just something on my throat there. But I don't know that, this is going to be the season of the Vegas Golden Knights, is it not? And maybe Ovi lifts the trophy. Maybe we see, you know, Stevie Y's third time with his club in the conference finals of the last 4 years, where they finally get over and get a cup. You know, a legitimate one where they didn't get scored on in game 6 in the final. And maybe it's, you know, the rags-to-riches story, the Cinderella of the city of Winnipeg. You lose your franchise, you are without pro hockey for ages, at least at the NHL level. The patience they've shown. Those would all be great stories, but again, this season will be remembered for the expansion team where some wine guy that used to be in the military said, hey, this crazy little entertainment city of Vegas, which isn't little, by the way, there's like 2 million people that live there, we're going to give you $500 million so we can be that round number, 31, we can get that into the NHL. Seemed crazy at some stops along the way. I was always one that thought they'd be able to sell tickets. Look, if you can sell, you know, 250 Celine Dion shows a year, I'm sure you can sell 41 hockey games, right? Oh, people don't go to Vegas to watch sports. Well, what? Because you wanted them to watch the Wranglers because they needed to see a AAA baseball team? Come on. It's an entertainment mecca. People go to be entertained. Hockey is that. I was always one that thought they would sell tickets, but what we none of us expected, at least I can recall, this team wasn't going to be good. This team was going to be Vancouver, Arizona, you know, dregs of the Pacific Division, weren't they? Oh, you got William Karlsson. That's great. He did get all of 6 goals last year. 43. Oh, that's a pretty good year. There's a few good moves. Yeah, they fleeced Florida. They got a young offensive defenseman out of Anaheim. They were in a pickle. Got a couple good players out of the Wild because they had some protectionist issues. But more often than not, the guy they got, you're thinking, okay, well, that's a salary dump for a pick, or it's a journeyman that's probably not that good anymore, or a guy like Derek Englund. It's like, okay, well, he's a heart and soul, or he could probably wear a letter, but what are you getting on the ice? You're really going to take that guy over a young defenseman like Brett Kulak? They did. Look smart on them now. And there's some dumps on this team. There is. Like Jason Garrison, not on the roster. They went and signed one of the best players, Vadim Shipachev, out of Russia, out of the KHL. Sent him to the minors before he got into a game in the NHL. Maybe it was one game, whatever it was. He wasn't too keen on going down to play for the Chicago Wolves in the A. Don't even know that he left Vegas. And finally said, you know what, guys? I'll give you the signing bonus back. Let me go. Let me out of here. And other guys that were just parts, like Lucas Spezza, he was a bad defenseman for the Canucks for a long time, right? Clayton Stoner, a guy that they had to take. He's injured. That's Grabowski on injured reserve, David Clarkson on injured reserve. Like, they did a lot of cap favors for teams. They got a ton of picks, and it was like, okay, this team will be good in 3-4 years. What we didn't expect was that year one, this team would be an absolute nightmare, and the man joining us on the South Street Burger guest hotline would know better than all of us. His name is Brendan Dillon of the San Jose Sharks. Sir, I appreciate you getting out of the wrapper early. You're in the Pacific time zone, so we do appreciate it.
Yeah, no, appreciate having me. You know, I'm just trying to get back into the swing of things here. You know, summer, getting back into the routine and getting back into the old gym.
What did you see from Vegas in round two? I don't know how fresh the wounds are in terms of where you're at mentally. Are you over it? Are you still thinking about it? But I guess they're surprising. Oh, we won't take them for granted. And I don't think anyone did. And yet here they are still rolling. They're in the bloody conference final. This has been stunning.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely deserve a lot of credit. They're very well coached. They're well disciplined, and I think just from top to bottom, they really pride themselves on working. And from their top line to their fourth line, all six defensemen. And I think the kind of key to everything is Marc-Andre Fleury, as we found out in the second round, and he was unbelievable. We had a couple grade A chances to, whether it was an overtime steal game or just to be able to finish them off. But, you know, credit to those guys. And I'll be honest, I haven't been watching too much hockey since our season ended. It's pretty tough, but, you know, they are a good team for sure.
What's that like? The, you know, your club that went to the finals 2 years ago, you know, last year was not the long run you wanted. You didn't have Joe Thornton near full health. You had other guys dinged up in that opening round series against the Oilers. This year, second round, but all of a sudden it ends quickly in a series where you did create a lot of chances, as you alluded to. What are the few days that follow that like? Do you get out with the boys, try to forget it? Is it, you know, pack your bags and get out of there as quick as possible? Walk us through that process.
Yeah, it's not an ideal process by any means. I think especially for our group here, just, you know, 3 years removed now from going to the finals, from being, you know, two wins away from hoisting the cup. And I think we have a lot of those guys that have been here now for these last 2 years, and a good core group of veterans that have continued to lead the way and be successful on the ice. And, you know, and that includes just Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, Joe Thornton. Even though he's been injured these last 2 years, he's been just an unbelievable guy around the young players, working in the gym to get back. And I think those guys kind of set the bar for all of us, and we kind of follow suit. And it's tough when you have success and then losing last year in the first round and this year in the second round. You know, anytime you're making the playoffs and, you know, you're even getting past the first round, you're expecting to win, you're expecting to go all the way. And I think that's what we had as a group. And I don't think it was something where we got blown out. You know, three of those games go to overtime, you know, a power play goal here or there. And, you know, you never know what happens, but we unfortunately have to just prepare this summer and get back to it in training camp.
Boy, you got a feel for Joe Thornton, who was injured mid-January, and I think everyone was hoping he'd be back for the playoffs. Did you guys know that it would be doubtful? Did you hope back, you know, the stretch drive that you'd have him for the playoffs? What did you know about his injury as you moved towards the second season?
Yeah, it was definitely tough. I mean, Jumbo is your first line center. He's an unbelievable player. You know, debatably the best passer of all time. A guy that's presence on the ice alone is, you know, he's one of the best in the world. And I think for him to play, you know, 18, 19 seasons, be as healthy as he was, and then, you know, to have these back to back, just pretty much freak accidents to his knees. You know, almost identical plays. Just super, super freak accident. But I think for him, he worked so hard to get back. And last year against Edmonton, playing pretty much with the torn ACL, and then this year having another torn ACL come, I think it was end of January. And, you know, he was on the ice with us pretty much from, you know, middle of March on. And I think if we'd gotten to that third round, he might have been coming back. And, you know, by no means would he have been 100%, but I think having a Joe Thornton at 60%, I think a lot of teams, ourselves included, probably would have took him. And for him, it's just an unfortunate thing. And, you know, hopefully we're going to be able to have him back next year.
He's a free agent this summer. He, in his exit chats with the media, noted he'd love to be back. He'd be willing to take a pay cut to be back. Do you get the sense he'll be wearing teal next year?
I have a sense, too. I mean, I think he also noted that, you know, he bleeds teal. He's been here now, I think, over 10 years, something like that. He's a San Jose Shark. He's one of those guys. You think of that Patty Marlowe, Joe Pavelski. I mean, these guys are Sharks hockey, and he's led the way. He's been such a leader on and off the ice in the area and the city, and you know, he fits our systems, and the coaching staff loves him. I think it's just a great fit for him, and I just can't see him playing anywhere else.
Your GM went out and made a splash at the deadline, adding Evander Kane. Tell us about him getting integrated into your locker room and what you saw on the ice. And what's the player like? Because, you know, to be fair, there's been some off-ice incidents that have followed him throughout his career. He's been known as an abrasive personality, at least from afar. What did you find?
Yeah, I thought Kaner came in and he did really well. He was a guy who, as you said, he had a bit of history that everybody noted, from the media to our players as well. I mean, anytime you're getting a guy that's of his talent, you know, you want to do your background info on him. And I think, you know, our GM did a great job of getting him. He came into, you know, our Sharks culture, and a lot of veteran guys, Joe Thornton, as I mentioned, just kind of took him under his wing and just kind of said to him, hey, this is a team that expects to win. This is a team that takes pride in playing well and in representing hockey in a positive way. And I think overall for him, coming from a couple organizations at the time that hadn't been winning, he'd never played a playoff game, it was a big learning experience. And coming in pretty much right in the heat of a playoff push, from March 1st on, it was every game was playoff type hockey. And from the physicality to his skating to his goal scoring, I mean, I think he fit the bill perfectly, and that was a big part of our success. And I think overall, we're hoping to be able to have him back. I think he fit in and meshed with the guys well, and you know, really did a lot of growing on and off the ice.
Brendan Dillon of the San Jose Sharks joins us on the Pinder Hour on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. What does the offseason look like for you? You're back in Vancouver area, I imagine. I think you said you were on a flight yesterday. Do you take a while away? Are you a gym rat? Do you want to be there now? Is this an opportunity to golf? What do you fill the time with?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that you want to take a little bit of time away from the game. By no means do you want to just kind of throw the hockey bag in the corner of the garage, but it's tough. It's frustrating, especially when you feel like you should be playing still. You want to still be playing. You feel you had one of those teams that can still be playing right now. I mean, you know, I was talking to our buddy Ryan Johansson there yesterday too, and I mean, he feels the same way. You just expect your team to have success. It takes a little bit of time, and you know, you kind of you get away from the game, whether that's going to a beach somewhere or just, you know, kind of kicking back and hanging out with your buddies or your family and friends, and I think that's something that's necessary too. But for me, I love to get into the gym, and I'm sure I'll be in there sooner than later. You know, you kind of map out your schedule based on that sort of thing, and getting back onto the ice and, you know, looking at the things you can improve on. And that's, at the end of the day, kind of all you can look forward to now is this training camp and getting ready back to those.
You noted Ryan Johansson, his Predators eliminated. I imagine a similar feel he'd want to still be playing as you are. And I think both of you guys expected to move through. Not that it's easy when you're one of the last eight teams left in the dance. What about Martin Jones? Do you run into him out in Vancouver in the offseason often?
Yeah, I see Jonesy quite a bit. It's funny, you know, for him, we live on the same floor in San Jose. He's just about three doors down from me. We carpool together, and you know, I'd say he's probably one of the closest buddies I have on the team for sure. And a player that's been a big part of the Sharks' success over the last couple of years, and a fellow Calgary here, I guess a notable Calgary Hitmen player, guy that's just, you know, undrafted and worked his bag off to kind of get to the spot he's at. So a guy that I love seeing in the summertime, a scratch golfer, so I'm usually not getting too excited when we're playing with each other, but it's been a lot of fun to kind of see him and get to know him over these last few years.
Who's your power foursome? The four best golfers that are NHL players. I'm sure there's some good ones in San Jose where that season's a little longer than we might have up here north of the 49th.
Yeah, well, I mean, of guys that I've played with and kind of seen, I think Jonesy's got to be up there. I think he's like a 2 or 3 handicap. Joe Pavelski's a scratch golfer, so he's another guy that, you know, you got to kind of obviously keep your eye on. who else have I played with? Sean Horka a couple years ago. I remember he was a 2 or 3. I played with him in Dallas. And then Might have to put Joey in there, Johansson. Every time I play with him, he seems to be, you know, asking for more strokes. But then when we see the scorecard after, he's right around that 78, 79. So
he's a sandbagger, is what you're saying.
That's exactly what it is. And he's taking my money every time.
I love it. Hey, appreciate you. It's early out there. You're a good man for coming on. I was pulling for you guys in round two. You're not the only team that has been stunned by this alleged expansion team that looks pretty damn good. Have a great off season. We wish you well. Enjoy a little downtime and some golf.
Thanks, Pins. I appreciate it, man. Talk soon.
All right. There's Brendan Dillon of the San Jose Sharks. He joins us, as many of our guests do, on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Try the nacho burger. House-made pico de gallo, guacamole, cheddar cheese, and jalapeno-infused sour cream. No wonder it's Rhett's favorite.
No wonder.
It's no wonder at all why it's Rhett's favorite, because he loves nachos, see? Because nacho bear. You got it. Okay, good. I didn't need to explain it. Very good. We'll come back, talk a little golf. Tiger Woods in the Sunday red, looking especially dangerous, and, some guy named Webb Simpson, a jerk, ruined my weekend because he completely ran away from the field at the Players. Todd Halpin, when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning for Glenmore Audi. Open up a world of new roads with the Audi Q5. Experience dynamic styling, impressive performance, and outstanding luxury. Visit glenmoreaudi.com.
.946 Welcome back to the Pinder Hour, all brought to you by Glenmore Audi. Quattro Cups coming up, Jay. Off to one of my favorite courses on planet Earth. I mean, coming up, it's still 2 months, but I'm excited when I get to play Grey Wolf. So, yes, I'm pumped. And may have a little chance to take in some of that experience with us. Can't say much more than that. Very exciting. So thank you to them for sponsorship of this program and for allowing me to golf in their tournament while I'm the opposite of the spectrum from sober. Let's get to Todd Halpin, our usual Tuesday golf chat. Sir, how are you?
Doing well, Ryan. Yourself?
Good. Did you watch any hockey last night?
I did. I did catch a bit of it. It was pretty exciting, but a little anticlimactic. I was hoping the boys would pull it off.
Yes, I was with you. I was hoping there'd be a third period equalizer or at least a goal to get it to 3-2 for one of those 90-second flurries at the end with an empty net behind him. It didn't really happen. Now, which Vegas Golden Knight, we want you to say his last name, scored twice? First name, Jonathan.
Marchessault.
Well done, Jay. I feel like he needs a round of applause for that. It's very difficult, as someone pointed out on the text line, to say Marchessault without sounding drunk. So you did it. Good on you. Congrats.
Well, thank you very much, Ryan. Yeah. I think since I found out who he was like 3 months ago, his name's come up quite a bit.
Yeah, Dale Talon's not too keen on that, but everyone else is. Let us get to the golf of last weekend, the unofficial fifth major. Boy, there's some great names in that field. Boy, there were some hot starts as well. But, Webb Simpson ran away with it with an incredible Saturday performance and just a ho-hum one-over par 73 on Sunday. Bit of a air out of the balloon finish to the tournament, wasn't it?
Yeah, when you have a lead like that, you know, he is going to have to play a bit more conservative on Sunday and just kind of hang on to, you know, that massive lead. But, you know, I couldn't help but kind of follow the storylines that you mentioned with so many big names doing so well. But if they're getting blown out of the water by a guy on a hot streak, it's pretty anticlimactic. And I know Webb Simpson, he's got 5 wins on tour now, including a U.S. Open and some Ryder Cup appearances. But he kind of, to me, falls into that Patrick Reed kind of category where he just doesn't get the crowd going. You know, and he's definitely not the guy voted most likely to, you know, want to go for a beer with. Like, he's not a Pat Perez or a John Daly, Tiger Woods. He just doesn't seem to have that entertaining flair to his personality. Kind of like, I don't know. I feel bad calling guys out for something like this, but like Stuart Sink winning the British Open, like, okay, great, but is anyone canceling their tea time to watch that finish? Probably not.
I hear you.
The final round,
totally hear it. Yeah, and he was up by what, like a 73, and he won it by 4. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and Tiger, man, with that Saturday push, I mean, I'm sure there's some people checking their phones quite a bit to see if Tiger would be 3-under through 3 on Sunday morning. Or I guess Sunday afternoon, he ended up playing pretty late after that 65 on Saturday. But yeah, just with that amount of a lead, you'd think that, he held on to win. But TPC Sawgrass, man, if you're not careful, you can make some numbers coming in, especially on 17. It's not unheard of to see those eights and quad bogeys on the 17th hole. So could have been interesting.
Yeah, it's funny because, Thursday, Friday, scores were really low, like scorching low. And then Sunday, not many guys went deep at all. And, Tiger did get off to that great start on Sunday as well. He was 4-under on the front nine before he blew up. And he did card a 5 on the infamous water 17th par 3. So it got away from him a bit. But he was 6-under at one point on Sunday.
Yeah, you're right. He was definitely looking to make a charge. Now, Webb Simpson would have had to back up a little bit. But I think it's just a great sign for golf to see Tiger right there, man. Like, all you have to do for this tournament is take one guy with a hot putter out of the field, and now Tiger's only 2 back.
Yeah,
with 12 to play at TPC, and he's been on fire for the last 30 holes or something like that. So, definitely shaping up to be a pretty exciting couple of weeks leading up to the U.S. Open. Not sure if Tiger's going to play before the U.S. Open. I know he kind of releases those things a little bit sooner to the date quite often, just depending on how his body's feeling. But I would be surprised if he didn't play again before the U.S. Open. That's in a month or so. So
we'll just see where. I cursed Dustin Johnson. He got off to a great start. He was the leader after round one, a co-leader. Solid day two, if not spectacular, and then just meh on the weekend. Who did you curse with your pick in the one and done?
The old N pick, I believe, is who I
picked.
He's from Canada.
He's
from Calgary. Hmm. No pick.
No pick.
Yeah, I totally forgot.
That's embarrassing.
I wouldn't have picked Webb Simpson.
For the richest purse of the season.
Yeah, I'm saving Webb for the U.S. Open.
That's right, you're saving him. Now, all jokes aside, you talk about Tiger in the U.S. Open. Is this not where you were threatening to use him all year? Or was that the championship? Because one of these courses, what Majors was on, he's dominated over the course of his whole career.
Yeah, I'm going to take him for the U.S. Open still. I think Shinnecock just suits his game that much better than anywhere else. British Open, you never know. Like, there's so many variables that go into that tournament with weather and travel and, just the luck of the draw even. You know, you could have the mornings out there be 70K wins and the afternoons be fine and then switch the next day. So, you always see a pretty spread out leaderboard at the, at both majors, but for sure at the British, more to do with conditions than course difficulty.
Okay, so let us go to this week's event, the AT&T Byron Nelson. What do we know? Billy Horschel, your defending champ, eh?
Yeah, he missed the cut when I picked him this year.
Thanks, so Bill.
He can be a no pick as far as I'm concerned, but new golf course this year, Trinity Forest. It's only been around for a couple of years, and reviews originally were mediocre, but apparently it's taking shape. So, it'll be interesting to see all these guys on a course that nobody's played before. You kind of remove that home course advantage to some degree. Hopefully it's a pretty good follow-up. The field is not as star-studded as the players, obviously. It's actually a pretty common off week for a lot of guys. So just kind of those dog days of summer, ho-hum PGA tournament for $10 million.
You and I always poke fun at Mike Weir. He's made one cut in the last 5 years. There's a guy in this field this week who also is the butt of many jokes in the golf universe. His name is Steve Bowditch. He's an Australian who has the ability to shoot 80s like no one I've seen on tour of late.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about him since he got into a little bit of that drinking and driving situation back a year and a half ago. But yeah, he was playing quite well. Like, you look at the numbers before that, he was very good. And yeah, since then, just 80s left, right, and center. He's going to run out of exemption time pretty quick here.
I think that's why we haven't seen much of him. Combine bad decisions with bad golf, and you're not going to be invited to as many places. Now, Spieth is playing this weekend. Thoughts on why he might play this tournament versus others? Now, he is a Texan. Are we near home?
He's a member.
He's a member. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that course advantage. I was wondering if you'd catch that, but yeah.
Did you just say that and I just glazed over? Was that what happened?
No, I noted it to you in there, but maybe I didn't. But yeah, he's a member. He's been there for 2 years or something. It's a pretty new golf course, so I don't imagine he's played that many times. It's probably more of a, figurehead type of membership.
Sure. Yeah.
As opposed to playing like a whole bunch of rounds, like it's probably played five rounds there with corporate people, Under Armour hosting kind of thing, would be my guess. But yeah, he said, he's played it. He's quoted on it. So tough to bet against Jordan Spieth, man. Even at the Players, he ended up finishing pretty well. So
yeah, and he had an ugly Thursday. He was like, there was that group of them, he, McIlroy, and somebody else, and combined, they were like five over on day one.
Yeah, totally, man. And that, one of my favorite things to do is to just look at that leaderboard when it's all said and done, and you see the best players in the world. Okay, they're 13th place. Well, they're only three shots off second.
Yeah, and then factor in a bad Thursday, and it's like if the guy was just two under on Thursday, he would have won the thing.
Right. Yeah, like Xander Schauffele, second place. He won the Tour Championship last year. Haven't mentioned him. Haven't even talked about him on Golf Channel or sports. Like, nothing. Well, still amazing golf. Jimmy Walker, too, finished, his best finish since his diagnosis, which is pretty good to see.
Is that Lyme disease? Is that right?
Yeah, he has that, and it takes a while with that to really diagnose it and figure out treatment. So he's been, pretty down and out for about 2.5-3 years. So it's nice to see him rebound.
What do we know about Canadians? Last week there was three in the field, and two of them made the cut, if I'm correct.
Yeah, they did. Hadwin and Mac Hughes ended up making the cut. Actually, Mac had an amazing Saturday. He played with Tiger Woods and shot 68. So
wow.
Pretty unreal pairing. That would have been pretty surreal for Max, so I'm pretty happy that he got to play very well when Tiger was playing well and got to be in that environment. I think those are days that you can certainly build on a lot more than other ones, obviously. And then, him and Hadwin ended up finishing T57, so kind of bottom of the pack, but still a pretty decent score for the 4 days at 400 par at TPC is very solid.
Yeah, and again, T57 doesn't sound like much, but what's the paycheck for 4 days' work? I'm going to find it for you.
Boatloads.
Yeah. Taylor and Hughes tied. Is that correct?
Hadwin.
Hadwin. No wonder he's not showing up. I'll find you that. We'll vomit next week when we learn what a top 60 is worth on the PGA Tour, barely making a cut. Finally, you wanted to talk locally. I would think everything's got to be open now, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I think Stewart Creek opens like today.
Sure. And you know what? That's Canmore, higher altitudes. Sure that makes sense, and understandably so with the altitude they've got there. But in town, everyone's got to be super excited. We're approaching some of the longest days of the year here in the next, in 6 weeks, summer solstice. So get out there, get at it, and full tee sheets, I'd hope.
Yeah, I think for the most part, from all all reports I've heard, courses are in great shape. The course was a bit of poana on the greens. It was cold enough for, I think the number is 125 days of a certain temperature. I'm not sure exactly, but there's a lot of poa that has winter kill. But for the most part, pretty great conditions out there. As we could tell, the spring season was non-existent. We kind of jumped right into summer here. So the courses will green up really quick.
Last one for you. It's going to touch 30 degrees today, or we're hoping so. You're going to go no tarp for lessons at the Golf Canada Center?
Well, yeah, it's all girls lessons tonight at 5, 6, and 7:30. So
tarp at 5 then, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Good stuff. Thanks, sir.
Okay, see you later, Ryan.
Todd Halpin at GolfProYYC on Twitter. We didn't get to our picks this week. You can tweet at me if you're really wound up about the AT&T Byron Nelson. I promise I might get back to you. Reminder tonight, 6 o'clock, we'll take you to DC. Ovi and the Caps looking to get a 3-0 stranglehold. And as we talked about earlier, the Lightning looking to staving off elimination. Doesn't make sense, I know. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.